welcome to this week's Inside Education on 103.2 Dublin City FM with me, Sean Delaney. Inside Education is a weekly programme to inform, inspire and expand your horizons on topics related to teaching and learning. Podcasts of over 350 previous episodes can be listened to or downloaded from seandelaney.com/podcasts. Last weekend, around one-third of all primary school principals in Ireland convened on City West Hotel in Dublin for the annual conference of the Irish Primary Principals Network, the IPPN. I was there to meet some of the keynote speakers for listeners to Inside Education, and I'll bring you my first interview on today's programme. My guest today is the Chief Executive Officer of the Irish Primary Principals Network, Pádraig Clercan. Prior to becoming CEO, Pádraig was the founding principal of St Patrick's National School in Diswallstown in Dublin 15, and he has held many positions within IPPN, including that of treasurer. I have spoken to Pádraig on the programme before, so I began the conversation this time by asking him about concerns of principals attending the 2019 conference.
First of all, we're absolutely delighted to have nearly 1,200 school leaders here today. That represents nearly one third of the primary schools in the country, and we also had our best response ever to the survey in advance. We had over 1,000 responses, and I suppose a number of concerns are coming back. First of all, our teaching principals are under considerable pressure. We're still looking to ensure that they get at least one day a week to focus on their leadership and management. We're also lobbying the department and all of the education partners and looking for support from the INTO and everyone in relation to the moratorium on the post of responsibility. And we agreed with the department's approach whereby they prioritised the smaller schools, and the smaller schools all got their posts back. But it's now time for all schools to receive the post of responsibilities that they had a number of years ago. And, you know, if we're serious about leadership, we have to support schools and put the middle leadership team in place. Like everyone is saying, it's all about divested leadership. It's all about shared leadership. You can't do that unless you actually have, you know, a middle management team in place.
How does that impact on the running of a school day to day?
First of all, in a larger school, you know, and you're talking about curriculum development, you need people taking the lead in different areas and in different parts of the school at any one time. So, like, if you actually plan forward and you put together, you know, let's say a strategic plan, it's going to be very, very difficult to really put that into action and to ensure that you actually put it in place and focus on the embedding of it and ensure that it actually becomes part of the school culture, unless you have a team and different leaders around the school who are actually taking the lead on different aspects of school life. We all know it's not good. It's not good to have one person who's taking the lead on everything. We need different people. We need people to step up to the mark, but they deserve the opportunity to participate in middle leadership, and hopefully that would inspire them in the future to take on, you know, a more senior role in the school. But we can't expect, and it's not good to have a system whereby we're asking teachers to step into a senior leadership role, you know, without having that experience of middle leadership throughout their career. So I think it's crucial from a systemic point of view in terms of how we manage our education system that we really do ensure that we have a good middle management structure in place. I suppose one of the other things that we're very anxious, and you know, when we talk about surveys, obviously managing the workload and managing the pace of change. But we're actually very hopeful at the moment because the Primary Education Forum has been put in place. It's something that we've been calling on since 2015, where Maria Doyle, who was president at the time, looked for a calendar of reform to be put in place. And we lobbied hard for this with the different education partners, and we're delighted that this has now, in the last 4 months, been set up by the department, and the department themselves are very enthusiastic about how this might work. But, you know, to get all of the partners into the room at the one time and the different sectors of the department to come in and talk about their vision and their plans for the year ahead, it really gives us hope that we might be able to manage that reform and a change in a more structured and more effective way into the future. So I think in reaction to what's coming back at us, it is the management of that change process and people just not having time to think. It's all about implementing the next idea. And we know implementation is fine, but if we don't follow it up with actually, you know, the embedding process and making sure it becomes part of the culture, it really is a waste of time. And like all of that energy to go into managing change without making sure it actually has an impact on the kids long term. And for that to really happen, the leader needs to be in a position whereby they can say, they can move away from driving this agenda and it will still happen. That to me is the test of something that has been implemented successfully. There were a few other issues though that came up, Sean, in relation to, you know, great concern about homelessness. 4,000 children in the country homeless at the moment. 27% of schools with children who are homeless. 16% of schools with children in direct provision.
How does that manifest itself in school life from day to day?
It's interesting. I suppose it comes to the principal, but often, you know, it might only be, you know, some time after it actually has happened. People are very, very inclined to keep it to themselves. They don't want others to know about it. They feel that they might be judged. We know what's happening in, you know, in areas where you would expect there not to be, you know, the occurrence of homelessness. You know, I was talking of a principal, you know, very well-off area south of Dublin, telling me that it's becoming an issue in their school. And in those situations, like, the parents, the children, they're distraught. They're not able to talk to their friends. They're hiding what's actually happening to them. They're trying to, you know, present themselves as, you know, as living a normal life, whereby it's far from normal. They're still coming to school, even though they might have to get buses at 7 o'clock in the morning, and you know, because the parents want the child still to attend the local school. They still want them to, you know, to retain that stability of attending their primary school. It is really their second home, you could say, and it gives them some stability. So I think that's what's really difficult for the children and the parents in that situation, in that the child to a certain extent is nearly living a double life and is nearly living a lie, because they're trying to hide this, you know, from everyone. And in turn, you know, that with teachers and schools trying to support that, but, you know, to do so in a very discreet way, I think, you know, that is a challenge, I think, for schools. I also think, perhaps, you know, access to funding, you know, to help some of those families with the very basics, let it be hot food, transport to school, like some of the local SIPSIs were trying to organise leap cards for children, just to be able to, you know, to take that worry away from them, in that they didn't have to worry about the cost of transporting the children to the school, which was obviously an additional cost. So, you know, it's very practical ways and very practical support that we can give them. But I think fundamentally, as a society, we really need to look at how we're supporting families in this situation. And I was saying to others that we build schools when we have a shortage of school places. We have the school places and we don't have the homes. We have to, as a society, look at how are we going to invest in housing so that we can ensure that children have a home, you know, and like that the children who unfortunately have lost their home, that's going to be short-lived, and that they will be moved into suitable accommodation as soon as possible.
Is there also a problem with young teachers trying to buy homes with their salaries?
Well, I think it's an issue. You can see it on the ground. Like, certainly some of the feedback that I've had is that it's certainly easier at times, and I know people are finding it very difficult to get substitute teachers, but in some parts of the country there are substitute teachers available because they can't afford to come up to Dublin to rent a property and wait for that call to get some substitute work. So they're choosing to live at home and, you know, will take whatever comes their way in terms of work down at home from, you know, it's just not possible for them to afford the hefty rental costs that are in our urban areas. Certainly, well, I know from my own experience in school, like, it's much more difficult for our teachers to get on the property ladder at this stage. But the rental sector is a real concern, because if our teachers and nurses and guards can't afford to rent property, we're in serious trouble in terms of the future, I think.
The Primary Education Forum, is that going to meet? Is it a once-off meeting, or is it going to be meeting over a period of time?
No, we've actually met three times already, and there has already been an action in terms of the maths curriculum has been held back. The intention will be to meet, I would think, at least four times a year, and bring the partners together. And our objective would be that there shouldn't be any surprises in the future. We should know well in advance of any proposed change. And, you know, what we would like to see happening is that the school can plan a year in advance, and that there won't be any surprises landed on their desks, so that we can be respectful of the school planning process, and so that schools can be confident that what they put into the planning and into their plan, that they'll be able to focus on and implement. And if something else is coming, it'll be delayed till the next year. So it's really just to, you know, to coordinate things, you know, in a more efficient manner.
And that's going to be indefinite then? That'll be a continuing feature of the education landscape in the future, is it?
I would certainly hope so. That's the department's intention at the moment, and I suppose there's an onus on us all of the education partners, to make sure that this process works and that it achieves its objectives. But I think that all of the partners and the department are very willing and anxious to ensure that we would all continue to meet on a regular basis and to help to manage that change process into the future.
What are your priorities for the organisation for the year ahead now? You know, this is kind of a good time to look forward as well as looking back. So what are your priorities looking ahead?
I suppose one of the things that we're always trying to do is to provide more and more supports and services for our members. Our leadership support team, they help our principals and deputy principals on a daily basis, one-to-one, you know, phone calls and discussions in relation to issues that might be of concern to them. As an organisation, the group mentoring that we're involved in with CSL, to develop that is a priority for us. We also need to look at the one-to-one mentoring, which is a bigger project in itself, and there's a possibility that that we may be asked to take that on ourselves, and then APD, our second level colleagues. That in itself would be a significant project, so we need to be ready for that and to ensure that we have the structure in place to take that project on.
Would that be for new principals?
That would be for principals and they're just for their first year following appointment. It's something that we always did. We always matched up a mentor with our principals going back, but it's a formal structure now. CSL put together a very good format, and we'd be delighted to take it on, but we know that it's something that we would need to prepare for and, as I say, put the structure in place. We also have another number of other interesting projects. We redeveloped Education Post, their recruitment website for the education sector, and we're now in the process of redeveloping our text as sub service, our objective is to make sure that every substitute that's available in the country will be in a classroom. But we're actually now going to work with NAPD, our second level colleagues, and we're going to put together the one database for primary and second level. And I suppose it's in reaction to the teacher supply issue. We've been discussing this on an ongoing basis with the Teaching Council over the last number of years, how we can improve the system, how we can make sure that everybody who might be available to work would be in a classroom and not, that they'd be matched up with a school. So that's a significant project for us this year. It'll take us until September to get that new service up and running, but it's something that we feel should reap rewards in the long term.
The Minister gave an address to conference this morning and he received a standing ovation. What was it that members were so impressed by in his speech, do you think?
It's the first time I've seen a standing ovation for the Minister, and I haven't been at all of the IPPN conferences. I've been at most of them, but I'm told by those who have been at all of them, it was the first standing ovation a Minister got. I think, first of all, it's his openness. It's his openness to dialogue, to communicate, his openness to looking at how we can do things, you know, in a better and in a more efficient way. And I think that in itself means that, well, you know, to do that, it means, well, you know, at least you're looking at where the flaws are and we're not trying to pretend that everything is perfect. I think, though, that what really resonated with people is the fact that he outlined his objective, you know, that one of his priorities is to support teaching principals and to support that call for the one day a week, and to recognise the difficulties that they're facing. Also to recognise the difficulties that our school leaders in our special schools are facing, and that they need extra resources, they need extra supports. So I think the fact it was very clear that he wants to support these sectors within our system, but he's very open to the dialogue and to discussion and in terms of how we might do better into the future. And that's what came across. He wants to do better. He wants the system to do better, and he wants to support people on the ground who are trying to do their best for the children in our schools.
We're just at the end of January now, and people might be looking at the year ahead, and some teachers might be thinking that they want to make the transition from being a teacher to being a principal. At what stage in one's career is it optimal to make the transition to principalship, do you think?
That's a difficult question, Sean. It really is a privilege to be in the position of a school principal, a school deputy principal, because you're now having an impact right across the school, and you really can make a difference right across the school, and you can bring a vision forward, and you can impact outside of the school gates as well, and impact positively in supporting community. I would like to think that our teachers would aspire to school leadership in the future. And it is challenging. And sometimes we're inclined to only hear of, the challenges. And sometimes people say it's not possible, it can't be done. And, we have a mantra, and we say, you can do it. You can't do it all. And you certainly can't do it all on your own. And I think once we accept, we can't do it all. And our job is actually to make sure that we get our priorities right, and that what we can't get to can go down the bottom of the list, but we just need to make sure that we're choosing carefully. And, in focusing on giving something time and making sure it has an impact on the kids in the school, and that we don't rush anything and we give it the time. And that does mean that we have to stand over our plans and stand over our decisions. And I don't like, and sometimes people say, well, I might be criticized or somebody might take issue with me. That's fine. We need to believe in what we're doing. And others, of course, will challenge us. And that's right, because it makes us think. But it doesn't necessarily mean they're telling us what you're doing is wrong. So I think we need to really focus on what we want to do and achieve for the children in our school, say, over the next year, and not worry about the next 5 years, and not worry about what we won't get to. There will always be things that we won't get to. There will always be people who will tell us we should be doing something different, or we should be focusing on something different. That's the reality of life. I think if we focus on communicating with our school community, listening very carefully to our teachers, to our parents, and to the children, and then trying to make the best decisions with our boards of management in terms of where we feel the school needs to go in the next year, it's a very exciting place to be. But it is overwhelming if people try to do everything and feel they should be doing everything. I would say no, prioritise. It's okay to prioritise, and some things get pushed off the list. And that's fine, and that's the way we have to manage it into the future. And the other thing that I would say to our teachers who are thinking about leadership in the future, sometimes we continue to do things because we've always done them. And sometimes we need to look at things and say, it's okay to leave some things go or to park them for a while. Children don't need it for 8 years, and they're in school for 8 years. And sometimes we can say, no, we're gonna focus on one over the other this year. And that's actually maybe a good thing. And I know sometimes that we might have people telling us, the school down the road is doing it, why aren't you doing it? My answer would be, this is what our plan is. This is what our focus. And I was saying at the conference yesterday, I would have a one pager on the wall in my office. So that when people, because that's the reality, people will always come in and say, the school down the road is doing this, why we should be doing it. We're failing because we're not doing it. Being able to articulate very clearly what we are doing by having that one pager on the wall and saying, this is actually our plan, this is what we're focused on, this is how long it's going to take, and this is what we hope to achieve. And I'm delighted to listen to your idea. It's very, very important we listen to all ideas and suggestions, and we tell them, I'm listening. And when we're looking at our next plan, we'll discuss your suggestion, and maybe we'll do it. But whatever we decide to do will be what's best for the children. Certainly what's not good for children is if we take on too much, we create anxiety in the school, and I'm talking staff, management, and children. That's not a good thing. So I think an acceptance that we'll never be able to do everything is number one. And I would then say that once any of our young teachers accept that and understand that, and that it will be about making decisions, but the decisions are group decisions. It's not about taking it all on your own shoulders. It's about listening very carefully to those around us. Then I think school leadership becomes a very exciting place, and it's doable, and you can do it, and you can have a balanced life, and that's what we have to push for. And it's really important that we do that, and that the system backs us up. And I said yesterday, the inspectors have to go in and they have to affirm those who are prioritising, because if we don't do that, the danger is in the future people will feel the job is undoable and therefore they won't apply for it. But the job is doable, but we can't do it all. That's what my message is to everyone. My message: school leadership is a really exciting place to be.
And in order to help someone make that transition into school leadership, are there things that teachers can do to prepare themselves for leadership before they actually take on the full responsibility of principalship?
Yeah, see, I would like to think that every student who comes out of college, you know, when they leave Marino at the end of the year, every single one of them, and it's something we're delighted we get the chance to talk to the fourth year students in advance of the starting up of their career. And what I'd be saying to them all is that, you know, you're a leader from day one, and it's really, really important. And I would love to see everyone, and that's something I felt very passionately about in my own school. It's not about a title. It's about you feeling passionate about something and, you know, taking the lead on that. And everybody, I feel, has something to give in relation to that and within the school life. And again, I come back, it won't be possible to prioritise everything every year, but that doesn't stop you to continue to develop your expertise in relation to whatever area it is. And you don't need a title to bring that passion through to your staff room and through your teaching your colleagues, and some of them, they will pick it up from you. They'll pick up your enthusiasm from you. That's the start of the leadership. And of course, then I would hope that there will be opportunities for people, you know, to lead in a more formal sense, whereby they'll be given posts of responsibility. Because I suppose the difference then is you're accountable for what you're leading. And in that way, build up our experience. But what I would say is I definitely think, you know, leadership, it is a different space, and it's very important that we prepare for it. And I think that, you know, the courses that are available through all of the colleges and, you know, through CSL, but also some of the shorter courses that are available, even through some of the summer courses, are well worth doing in terms of people starting to look at the leadership space and even to try to build up an understanding of it. And that will help them to make a decision as to whether it's a space that they really want to enter.
We last spoke, Pádraig, around this time last year, I think, and you were just a few months into the job. You're more fully bedded down in it now, say. How have you found the first year and a half of the position?
I think it's like any new position, and I always say to people, you know, I have great admiration when somebody decides to make a change or put their name forward for a new position or even move school. Like, I think change is good for all of us. Sometimes it's daunting, and I certainly found it daunting moving into a new position. I found it very difficult to leave my own school. It was a startup school. I've been there from the start, and I couldn't believe how difficult I found it to speak to the children and to our staff on the last day. It was the first time in my life I got up and just nothing came out. So, like, you know, change is daunting, but it's really good for us. And I suppose it's only when we step back that we realise how much that we're actually learning. It's happening all of the time, and you're being put forward and into different positions. And the amazing thing is that, you know, it can be difficult, but it gets easier. You know, the more that you do something, it does get easier, and you become more comfortable actually engaging with it. The job has been extremely exciting. It's a real privilege, and it's a real privilege to meet so many leaders out there and to realize there is so much expertise and there's so much knowledge. And I find that I have so much to learn from different people that I interact with, different members that I interact with, who actually would just inspire you at times when you are talking and spending some time with them. It's like all jobs, like all leadership positions, it's challenging. It has its very challenging days. But that leadership, that's what leadership is about. It is about those challenging days and building up the resilience to be able to deal with some of those difficult situations. But if we don't have those then it's not worth it to a certain extent. You know, I found it to be a great experience, and I really do feel, you know, I'm on a 5-year secondment, and I feel that if, you know, I go back to my school at the end of it, you know, I will be a different person, and I think that I will have grown, I'll have learned, and I'll have developed, and I certainly would feel that that would be something I'd be able to bring back to my school environment if that's the case, if that's what happens.
And finally, Padraig, I know, like myself, you're a fan of podcasts and books and so on. Have you come across any podcast or book about leadership in the last year that has given you any insights or that has enlightened you in any way?
It's interesting that you asked me that, Sean, because I've spent a lot of time in the car over the last year, and I was trying to actually get through all of your 300 and whatever number of podcasts. So I really actually did enjoy those, and again, just listening, the diversity amongst them and the different people. So I actually have really enjoyed them. It's I've started using the train more, and the difference with the train is that I'm more inclined to do work, so I'm more inclined, the laptop is out, so I actually haven't been listening to podcasts. I was, you know, I listened to a few of Andy Hargreaves' books, again in the car through the audio books, yeah. But since I've been, you know, the train is great, but I find on the train I'm more inclined to work and to do less listening. Which it's good in one way, but it's bad in that way. So certainly, I have to say, I really enjoyed your podcast and Andy Hargreaves' books. I found, I think the audio books are actually a fantastic way if you're a busy person, and you know what I mean. Just the one thing I find is you can't spend too long at it. You know what I mean. If you go for a walk, it's great to listen to the audiobook, but I find after maybe 20 minutes, a half an hour, you nearly need to take a break from it because the brain just seems to automatically switch off. Yeah, that's what I have great intentions, though, to build on the Andy Hargreaves material. He's very insightful, and he gets you thinking. So I'd encourage people, if they're interested in those types of books, go read them all.
And that recommendation to read Andy Hargreaves' books about leadership came from the Chief Executive Officer of the Irish Primary Principals Network, Padraig Clerken. I spoke to Padraig on the edges of their 2019 National Conference, which was held in City West Conference Centre. I'll bring you more from the conference in the coming weeks, but that brings this week's programme to an end. Remember, you can listen back to this programme and over 350 others by going to seandelaney.com and clicking on the Podcasts tab. My book about teaching, Become the Primary Teacher Everyone Wants to Have, was published by Routledge and is available online or on request from your local library or bookshop. Until the same time next week, this is Sean Delaney saying goodbye. Thank you for listening.